Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. So, we'll just go over it again, I guess. So, none of these points have in any way been, there's been provided no counter-argument, no explanation for how anything I'm stating can't be true or isn't true. That is, the parts where I'm saying, there's a difference between the absolute facts, which are, there was no good arguments for kinetic energy provided in its 300-year history. There was no explicitly good evidence. Now, there were some, you know, Ken Wheeler-style experiments. You know, I dropped stuff in clay and I made it do a certain thing. So they look like evidence, but if you really thought about it and recognized that maybe clay has a bias for velocity like a piece of wood does, you know, again, I'll just argue, it's just a fact that if you can apply your pressure to a piece of wood in a certain configuration, that is, your momentum has a certain speed and pressure, mass, the fact is you'll do less work and do more damage to the wood. It's just a fact. You can do more work on something and get less physical result, or you can do less work and apply the work in a certain way, karate chop, and it'll do more, okay? It'll create more of an effect. And that every single piece of matter has those kinds of tolerances. Some things like glass will shatter. Some things like other stuff will bend and misshape. But everything absorbs the energy differently. So clearly those experiments can be suspect, and there are very few of them, frankly. Even though, you know, so, you know, what I'm going to discount, you're going to say you have three experiments that indicate that kinetic energy theory has some validity. I could argue there's 999,000 of other experiments that say it. There's no reason for it. We don't need it. Momentum gets right answers. So, I mean, I've pointed out how it has a horrible history. It's not the scientific method. There's no, you know, look before you leap kind of attitude here at all. It's just sort of a, you know, they just chose, and they chose badly. They didn't choose using logic and reasoning. They chose because it, whatever, was more appealing for some other reason. So, all right, so I just, you know, no point in talking about the arguments. I'll just make the arguments and add some new ones and see where we go. So the simple principle is that you can just see it in the formula, okay? 1/2 m, and then you have v squared. All right, so now it means that, you know, versus, you know, just this simple idea that it's just about mass and velocity, and I can have a big velocity and a small mass, or a small v and a big m, you know, and that these things are always just equal. Okay, this is just manipulating the matter in a way that doesn't really change it in its capacity to interact in the universe. It's heat. It has the same heat. I can't mess with its thermodynamics. All right, and this, obviously, as I've pointed out, a simple device like a lever, you know, where you're using it to lift a rock or something, you know, you have a, you know, you're going to use a big motion here to create a strong, heavy little motion here. And it's really about weight, okay? So you're going to apply 50 pounds of weight to the lever, and you're going to get, you know, 300 pounds of pressure pushing up. And that's, you know, by this formula, this is more energy. By this formula, this is more energy, okay, than you got out here. Because of the motion, the speed. Because all you care about is speed. Speed is exaggerated in its importance, and, you know, the mass isn't. So, I mean, something as simple as a lever becomes a free energy device. And, of course, that applies to gears, too, as I've pointed out in previous videos, that the little gear, okay, and the big gear. Now, the argument is no, it's the same here as it is here in terms of its energy. And all you're changing is how you're distributing it, you know, in what time frame or what distance you'll be able to give the energy to something in terms of a weight or a pressure, a torque. So you're just changing the torque. The torque change is just in this. You're just converting like, 50 pounds over, a half a second versus 300 pounds over a tenth of a second, kind of argument. So you're just changing the way you're distributing the same thing. So obviously this can't make free energy. There's not, with every, if I have a gear turning here, or I have a gear turning here, you're saying that when I turn this way, that is, I convert this little motion into this bigger motion, that somehow I'm making energy. And then when I do the opposite and I turn this gear to turn little motions in this gear, somehow I'm losing energy. And losing it in a real sense. I mean, they make these arguments that half the energy is lost, and yet you won't be able to find where half the energy went. There won't be any thermodynamic signature of the energy escaping. They're just saying it doesn't exist anymore. And that's the implications of this. It has, it has profound implications on any kind of thermodynamically consistent and conservative understanding of the universe when you do this. Because you're saying every single time I just subtly changed the momentum of an object, that is, the configuration of its velocity and its mass, every time I make a change, I just give it a little more mass and a little less velocity, okay, I'm changing how much energy it has. And, so that's kind of a big statement. It's not a little statement. Big statements ought to come with big evidence, and there's none. So I can make all these arguments I've made about how the bowlers can't find the extra energy. You're saying the 8-pound ball has twice as much energy, that the bowlers can't find it. The wrecking ball companies can't find it. The cannonball shooters can't find it. The catapulters can't find it. Nobody can find this extra energy. They can't use it in the real world. There's no examples where the kinetic energy theory is obvious and profound in its, being visual. You can see it. And it also works for the energy that has to go into a system. So they'll tell you it takes 4 times more fuel, gas, to go twice as fast, to double your speed. But, that seems like a really simple experiment. Why don't they do it? They haven't done it. They can't prove it. They can't show it to be a fact. And actually, because of the way friction works and different things, the opposite truth is true. It takes less gas to go faster. You'll use less gas the faster you can go, in most cases. And it's certainly true for rockets. You want to go somewhere with a rocket, you want to use less gas than you shoot for the furthest distance. Over the longest distance, per mile, you'll use less and less gas, per each foot of travel, the farther you go, the more gas you use. It's probably not the best way to say it, but it'll have to do. So let me get to some of the theory. But anyway, there's no counter arguments to anything said here. They don't provide any indication of any extra evidence. All we have is a couple of silly experiments in the 1700s, which I've already explained, and which, have no validity, really. And that proved a theory that was overtly wrong. That theory was just mv squared, no half in front of it. So it wasn't getting anything close to right answers. So they proved a theory that was wrong and then changed it, 100 years later, stuck a half in front of it and said, our bad. It's better now. It's still pointless. There's no reason for it. There's no necessity. There's nothing that screams we have to fix. There was nothing wrong with Galileo, Descartes, and Newton were getting pretty consistently right answers, and they had no need for this. And there was no evidence that we got righter answers when they invented it. It just creates all kinds of logical non-continuity in understanding the mechanics and the conservation of energy. It just breaks the whole idea of conservation. Because you could play these silly games where, I'll use momentum when it's convenient, or I'll use kinetic energy when it's convenient. It's not physics. It's not science. That's not very smart. So, I'll be back. Alright, so on to a little bit of theory. So I have pointed out that, well, gravity's kind of known, its signature element is the inverse square law. So the same law that says, you know, what this hand is going to do. I go half the distance, this hand is four times bigger. Okay, same inverse square law, right, as gravity. The sun, right now, produces photons at exactly the same rate, the inverse square law rate. So if you just think of the sun in an opposite way, okay, like the photons are going in instead of coming out, same law, same rule. So gravity is just doing what the sun does in terms of ejecting photons. Gravity is just an apparent opposite phenomenon, where instead of being pushed away, you're attracted by the photons. And no, the real argument would be you're attracted because there's something on the outside pushing you in. Okay, but regardless, it's the same rule. So it isn't anything magical. It isn't like this is how much it pulls on something or any of this. You don't need to think of it in those terms. And so it's demonstrated that, you know, simple things I've pointed out that just scream to you that, oh, okay, yes, the rule really must be, okay? You know, I can go at different speeds by a gravitational body. And just like the sun, you could say, well, how much sunburn am I going to get? If I go by the sun slowly, well, I'm going to get hit by a lot of sun, and I'm going to get sunburned. And if I go past the sun quicker and quicker, you can understand there's less photons are going to hit me. I'm going to be influenced less and less. I'm going to get less and less of a tan. And the same thing happens with gravity, right? I mean, something going very fast is in the gravity a very short amount of time. So it's really very understandable as, well, it's how much exposure you have to it. The less exposure, the less effect. And it's that simple, and that's what gravity's doing. So it's about how much time you're in gravity. So just like the sun, it doesn't matter how far I walk in the sun, it just matters how long am I in the sun. That's all that's going to decide how much sun I get exposed to. And the same is true for gravity. Now, the trick is, right, I can delay my processing of gravity. I can change how I process the gravity by putting me on a slope. I can take something that only takes this much time, and I can convert it into something that takes time plus, you know, much more time. All right, but I haven't really changed anything because in this circumstance, if you're understanding it as gravity as being a pressure you're collecting, that you do understand that you're giving it to this ground, right? And you're also giving it to rotation. Okay, this isn't rotating. When this falls, it's just falling. It doesn't rotate. This is rotating. So it's converting this energy down into rotational angular momentum. So another place for the momentum to be stored. But clearly, what's the difference in these two worlds, this line and this line, is that there's a bunch of this happening, where you're giving your gravity to the slope. So you can understand it as you can't collect it because you're not free-falling anymore. This is free-falling. You're collecting gravity and nothing's stopping you from collecting it. As soon as you hit a surface, you do your exchanging. You exchange the energy you collected, the money in your bucket gets distributed to the ground, to the ground, to the ground, to the ground. So the difference is that you have collected more gravity by going this longer time. By taking a longer time to go down this slope, you have, in fact, collected more gravity, but you gave away a bunch of it. So for every foot you travel, or every inch, or whatever increment you're using, you might collect $10, but you gave six of it away to the ground. So you only got four net, and that's what you're doing. So that's the only difference. So time is still the only thing that matters. The only, you know, time is telling you how long are you in the gravity, and then the only other question is how much are you giving away of the gravity you've collected. So I've used the lever argument over and over, okay? So we know this, all right? So I have a half mass here, a double mass here. All right, it's pretty simple. Now, you say this has twice as much energy as soon as I start this oscillating. So you'll concede that they equal each other here. So we know this doesn't weigh the same as that, right? They're really different weights. So what's the difference? And the difference is an understanding that the weight is just your mass times your velocity. That's your weight. So if your mass is 100 pounds of matter, and I give you 1 meter per second of velocity, you'd understand, well, that will equal your 100 pounds, you know, on Earth, blah, blah, blah. So that's all you're really saying is, well, that's first telling you what your the rate of gravity that you're collecting. So because you're on the ground, like this on the lever, you're spilling what you're collecting into the ground. And the fact is you might be getting hit by 9.8 meters per second worth of gravity, but you're giving away 8.8 meters of it. And you're only keeping the one. And you can feel the one. The one is the thing keeps pushing into the ground, and the ground pushes you back constantly. And you can feel that activity. So why pretend that these two objects are just sitting still? When kind of obviously you can understand that they never can sit still because they're in gravity. In gravity, they're collecting it, and then they're giving it away. They collect it, and they give it away, and they collect it, and they give it away. And on balance, there's just this net disproportion of the amount still in their buckets. And the amount in those buckets keeps, new water goes in, old water spills out. So it's constantly active, but it's a net amount. And it's that net amount that you're measuring, okay, in the sense that obviously this one's collecting per second twice as much as this one's collecting. But the fact is that it's getting pushed back at a different rate than this one is, so it's giving back less. So you can just argue that their weights are equal because this one's moving twice as much distance as this one's moving. They have a different amount of momentum. And you can see it as soon as you start moving the lever. Put any energy in. So make a lever that has these as solid masses. You know, they're solid, built right into the lever. And it balances. And then all you do is inject some new energy. The fact is that whatever energy you inject on one side is going to create twice as much energy on the other side because of this fact that it's going to move the mass more distance. There's no way to evade that. So your formula says there's more energy over here than there is here. And you kind of know that, well, no, there can't really be more energy. It doesn't make any sense. It's just in a different configuration where, yes, I have more mass here moving less distance. I have less mass moving more distance, but the bigger argument is it's moving faster. It moves more distance in the same time. And so, you know, it makes nothing. Momentum works. Momentum is conserved. The energy is conserved. With momentum is the theory, but mv squared, it isn't conserved. All right, so we'll try one more. All right, so accepting the fact that gravity is easily analogized to the sun, you know, that it's just doing the same process, the same inverse square law, the same basic rules, except just reversed. All right, it's just like an opposite version of the same exact thing. And so the implication is that it's a real thing, like a photon is a real thing. It has to interact with something, hit it, and that it carries momentum. And so in spite of some of the crap physics says, I think you understand that. It's not like just some magical entity that it carries this thing called momentum. It has force. It has power. All right, and this, I think the argument is that, you know, whatever you think gravity is, it's the same thing. It has power, okay? It has, it affects matter, okay, in a way where it imposes this power on it, okay, like it's collecting it. You know, maybe you think there's some, you know, the Earth is down here and we're just going to drop a couple of things, you know, that's all there is to it. So, and I've argued that, you know, what can be really understood is that we already know that I could put the moon out here, you know, orbiting, or I could put a pea, a little tiny green pea, right next to the moon, All right. Far enough away that it doesn't get pulled by the gravity. Let's just, just play along. I could put it exactly the opposite side of the moon, whatever, it doesn't matter. But the fact is, it's going to orbit at exactly the same velocity. It's going to do exactly the same thing as the moon. So the fact is, I could break the moon into a million zillion little pieces, all right, and it would behave just like the moon. So even if I break it into a bunch of pieces, and the pieces are all scattered, it has exactly the same effect. Now, I could even spread it into an orbit, like a ring around Saturn. It won't create tides anymore. It won't do all that kind of stuff, but the little bits won't even know the difference. They won't care whether they're part of the moon or they're independently floating in space there. They don't care. They'll orbit exactly the same way because of their velocity. And that's all that matters, okay, is the little bits. So you can think of every piece of matter, a hammer or a feather. And all you're really saying is how many of these little bits does it have? And the little bits are all identical. That's why gravity affects things exactly the same velocity, is because it's actually affecting exactly the same objects. The feather and the hammer are these things, the atoms. The electrons and the protons are what the hammer and the feather are. They are not hammer and feather. They're just an arrangement of material bits. And the little material bits are all the same, and they all fall at the same rate, obviously. So that's why it's always the same rate. And all you're really saying is how many of the little bits are going to get sunburned. That is, how many little bits are going to be affected by gravity. And the gravity obviously goes through anything, in the sense that if it pushes this, it's going to push that. So the force goes right through everything. Even the opaque objects, it's technically going right through, because it forces the little piece of matter to move. And the movement of the matter is the same as far as the matter is concerned as being hit by the force. So all you're saying is how much does it get hit? And obviously the light thing, the thing that has fewer pieces of matter, collects less sunlight. So if you add up how much sunlight these two things are collecting, let me put 6 and 3 just so they're an even number. This one has 6, this one has 3. This one's collecting twice as much sunlight per second as this one. It's not going to fall any faster. It's just that it has more little pieces, so it's collected more sunlight. So it has more little pieces falling to Earth at the same rate. Okay, they get hit by the same amount of sun. They go faster and faster as they get hit by more and more. They get more and more tanned. They're tanning at exactly the same rate, and they're going to fall. And when they hit the ground, they're going to have, how tan are you and how many are you? That's the only question it's going to be. How long have you been in the gravity collecting sun? How long and how many? So if you have a lot of them, you can understand there's a lot of them together hitting the ground in a certain location. That's called heat. So if I can create a lot of stuff interacting, that's hot. Very few things interacting, cold. So I'm not going to make a bunch of stuff hitting each other when this lands, but there's going to be a lot of stuff hitting each other when this lands. So this is going to, hit with more bang, more momentum, because it has more elements, and that's it, the only reason. But the elements themselves are doing exactly the same thing. The elements only have one little quantum. See, it's kind of curious that they have this nice word, quantum, to define this idea of a discrete little bit of energy. And that's exactly what you have, is discrete bits of energy that are moving. Just as the moon is just a bunch of little moons. They just happen to be in the same location. And there's an implication to things being in the same location, in the sense that just like the sun's radiating sunlight from one location, the moon's doing the same thing. It's changing the environment for the Earth, the gravitational pull, all to one location. Not spread out, but in one location. So by this model, it's completely understandable theoretically why if I'm going to increase the velocity, the rule is it doesn't matter how many of these things I have. So if I want them to go twice as fast, I have an obligation to understand that, the only way they can go twice as fast is they have to be in the gravity twice as long. So you can figure that it takes, to go twice the velocity, I have to be in the gravity twice as long. So that's 2x. So you'd say, I just put them twice as high.
but then you have to figure out it doesn't work. I won't be in the gravity twice as long as I go twice as high. If I go twice as high, they're keep getting tanner and tanner. So the real tan ones only takes this much. They go this much distance in a unit of time. And the ones initially falling before they got, you know, when they were really white-skinned before they started tanning, they only traveled this much distance. You know, they have a much lower velocity. So there's only one unit of distance here, and there's three units of distance here. All right, so I'm not going to be able to, I'm going to have to go four times higher, four units of distance. Two units won't work because I won't be in the gravity long enough. So if I'm going to go twice as high, this fact means that this time won't be a full second. It'll be something much less than a second. So I won't be in the gravity long enough, right? I'll only be this much in the gravity, you know, half as much, frankly. So I won't be nearly tan. I won't, you know, so I won't be in the gravity long enough if I only go twice as high. If I go twice as high, I'll hit the ground in 1.3 seconds or something. It won't be 2 seconds. Therefore, I won't have acquired enough speed to have twice the velocity. So you can understand it. You can understand why this goes up much easier, this lighter object, because there's less force hitting it down. Because there's less objects to hit down, right? So it takes longer for this to slow down because there's less of it to slow down what you put in as energy, the extra velocity. It takes a long time to get rid of the extra velocity, a longer time, because you're the launching velocity. The first second you went three times the distance, so you collected very little sun. Right, so as you launch to go four times as high, you're in the gravity, you know, only 1 second for this whole giant distance. So you're not getting untanned. You know, you're not collecting the opposing force. The opposing force is just 1 second's worth for this distance, and then the final distance is this much shorter distance. And you collect just as much sun here in this little distance as you did this whole giant distance. So how far fast you run in the sun? So you run here three times, say, faster than you're running here. How fast you run in the sun doesn't make any difference. It's not going to change how much sunlight hits you. So I'm just saying, you know, it can be logically understood why it works this way. And not to be fooled. The fact that you have to go four times higher to go twice as fast is easily understood. It's not magic. It doesn't mean it took four times more work. It didn't take four times work. It only took twice as much work. It's not four times more gas to go twice as fast. It's only twice as much gas to go twice as fast. Yeah. But this is this simple. This is almost trivial, you could argue. I mean, this isn't chess. This is checkers. No, this shouldn't fool science. It shouldn't fool anyone, frankly. I mean, everybody should be logically equipped to understand that this makes sense. This fits the evidence. Okay, again, the simple argument. You're flying by a planet. Obviously, it's how long you're in the gravity that's going to decide how much your path is going to get bent. And the faster you can go by the planet, the less it's going to affect your direction, because the less of its force is going to hit you. The less light, the less fewer photons you'll collect. The faster you go by a light, the less photons hit you. Just a fact. All right. So we'll try one more maybe. All right, this bit's probably a level deeper in terms of theory that might be not as obvious or direct, but it's, I think, essential to understanding how the universe mechanically functions. And it's really not about you're going left and then you're going right, okay? That those are the two choices, left and right. There is this one in the middle, neutral. Okay, so it's like forward and reverse. You have to go through neutral before you can get to one or the other. So if I have some thermodynamic object and I put energy into it in a direction this way, what's going to happen? Okay, well, it's going to push this side this way. So there's energy this way. And what's going to happen when there's a reflection in here and it pushes on this side? Well, that doesn't mean it goes this way. It means it undoes this. And that's all it does, is it's basically just saying, now I stopped. So I am going this way. When this hits, I stop going that way. I don't go this way. So there's no arrow out here this way. There's no counter arrow. There's just stop. And then what happens when it hits this side again? Well, then I go again. And then I stop. And then I go again. And then I stop. So it's about which way energy comes into a system does matter. The system remembers. The system knows. So this piece of energy could bounce back and forth for a trillion years. All right. A billion years. It could be trapped and just be bouncing back and forth. It's still this direction. It's always this direction. That's the way it went in. And all you've done is cut it into segments of on and off, not on and backwards. So it's a key thing to understand about thermodynamics. So how do I undo this? Well, I could put in energy going this way that hits this surface. And now I have a piece of energy that can undo this energy. And then I have a neutral. I'm not going either way. But this energy isn't giving me energy. It's first got to get rid of this energy. So it's just the same argument in gravity. You have to slow something down and then stop it before you can go in the opposite direction. You can't go in the opposite direction till you go through nothing, neutral. So, you know. And then let's say I took one of these away. Now I have balance. And let's say I let this one fly out back into the universe. So I open a little hole and say, go away. Well, then I lost my balance, right? So this was creating dot, dot, dot this way. I've gotten rid of that, I've let it go. So now I can't have, you know, there's no, in here, there's nothing doing this back and forth thing, the neutral. So now I'm back to having this bias. So, you know, taking away, it looks like I just switched directions, but I really didn't. You know, in the sense that I put one piece of energy in and got a response out that's exactly the opposite. But it's not an opposite reaction. It's just that I took away the action that was balancing me. So again, this goes to the argument that you can understand this all as just currency. And if I give away something, I don't have it anymore. And it was probably doing something while I had it. It was balancing some part of me. And by giving it away, I've lost that balance. Now the balance might be I was 10 miles an hour in this direction. Well, if I give away, then I've got 9 miles an hour in this direction. So when the bowling ball hits the pins, it's giving away its energy. And clearly the 8-pound ball with the high velocity and small mass can give away to the pin a high velocity. It can give the pin a bigger velocity. The pin's mass is the same, whether it's a 16-pound ball or an 8-pound ball. The mass of the pin is the same. The fast one can give away more of its energy, but it's real energy it lost. I mean, it can't give the pin magic. It has to give it what it's got. So if it's got $10, it can now give $4 to the pin because of this velocity. And the 16-pound ball is going slower, so it can't make the pin go away at the same speed. So it can't give as much money away. So when the 16-pound ball hits, it only gives the pin $2. So the 8-pound ball can give $4 for the first pin, and the 16-pound ball can only give $2. But the 16-pound ball now has more energy still, because it only gave away $2. This one only has $6 left. The 16-pound ball would still have $8 left. So obviously, over time, both of them are going to give away all they got. They're going to go back to nothing, okay, not having any energy. And it's just about how many pins going how far. And the fact is yes, this pin will go far, okay, but the next pin ain't going to go nearly as far. And then the last pin's barely going to go anywhere. And the 16-pound ball is going to do the opposite. It's going to give a little bit away and a little bit more. It'll be the same, but it'll have more little arrows. So this one has big arrow and then a fast decline. So it peaks and then it falls. And this other one starts off slow but ends up in the same place. Same amount of energy. It just gives it away in a different form over time. See, this line overlaps this line. So you can understand that the space, this difference, will be the same as this difference added up. So the 16-pound ball's 10th pin it hits, it's got a lot more energy than the 10th pin the 8-pound ball hit. So the 16-pound ball does its more work here, the 8-pound ball does more work here. But if you add up this area and this area, they'll equal each other. It's the same thing, the same energy. Your theory is somehow there's more. I can give these pins more than what I have. You don't even really understand it as the ball gives away its energy when it hits the pin. When the ball's rolling and there's friction, you know, not much friction in a bowling alley, so let's make it asphalt or something, and it hits the little particles and pushes them into the ground, it's giving away its energy. With every hit, with every little piece of matter it vibrates or heats or moves, it's giving away what it has. It's giving away its biases. So if it has a bunch of arrows going this way and they're hitting, that's what it's losing each time it's hitting. It's losing an arrow going that way. It's losing a piece of its energy because it gave it to something else and gave it motion. That's energy conservation. But anyway. So it's probably enough. Maybe I'll think about how to wrap it up, but I'm just going through the list. These are all things that no counter arguments have been provided to anything stated in these videos. There's the bad history, there's levers. It doesn't pass the lever test, kinetic energy. It makes levers free energy devices. So instead of being conversion devices, which I always thought of them as, you go outside and you convert this motion into the little motion here that's much more, have more torque, the shorter, heavier motion. So you're changing the weight of things, okay? And so you're applying a weight in a certain way here, and it's converted into a different weight. It's the same weight, a different pressure over, you know, how fast the pressure is applied. You're changing the momentum. So the lever just converts momentums. It takes big V's and little M's and changes them into big M's and little V's. It just changes the momentum. There's no increase in anything called energy. It's the same amount of ability to do work. It's just in a form that's different. That's it. And it can be converted back. So again, the lever kind of proves it. I mean, your argument is one side of the lever, okay, has twice as much energy on it. So every time there's a motion on this side, somehow it's converted into less energy on the other side. So somehow more energy turns into less energy, and then the less energy somehow makes more energy on the other side. It doesn't make any sense. It can't make sense in gravity. How can I drop this, you know, a known amount, 100 joules of drop, and create 200 joules of lift? And then I have 200 joules of drop now because I have 200 joules of lift, and it converts only back into 100 over here. It doesn't make any sense. You're destroying energy and creating energy. How can that make sense? All right, what else is there? Forget it. So you got this bad history, you got no evidence, you just have a draconian and doctrine that you're imposing on everybody, and they must believe or you'll insult them and attack them, and you got nothing to defend it. The universe worked fine. Newton, Galileo, and Descartes, three really famous scientists, found it to be completely satisfactory in describing the universe. And there's just no reason to change it because it worked. So you took something that worked so well that Newton was thought of as a magician, that he could figure out all this stuff. He could figure out, you know, the rings in Saturn, all of these things. He could calculate them perfectly with momentum. And you decided, you've decided that somehow that was garbage physics, and that he would have gotten better answers if he used kinetic energy. And that's just simply not true. It won't work in space, as I've pointed out all of these examples. Space is just about how much, you know, material you shoot in a direction, how fast, and that's it. There's just momentum. There's no kinetic energy in space. You can't change the direction of your spaceship by shooting bullets out the side instead of 2-liter bottles, you know. Gun barrels work just as well as bullets. You can't pretend that, you know, the bullet side can push you that way more than the gun. It can't. It's the same energy. The barrel of the gun has half the explosion's energy. The bullet has the other half. That's all there are, those two halves. There's no other energy. Yeah, so there's just no counter arguments. So it's just talking to the wind at this point. Because the only counter arguments is you must believe we have a formula. And as I pointed out, the formula doesn't mean anything, because they just say, they take Newton, who said basically F equals MV, and they change it to F equals MA. And A doesn't even have an answer. A isn't something you can multiply by and get the right answer, because A is just a rate of acceleration. And without knowing how long you're accelerating, it can't mean anything. So anyway, so I can't help you any further, but clearly this isn't good science. I'm sorry. It's not good science to be to behave as badly. I mean, except for the fact that you haven't sentenced me to death, you're behaving as badly as the Inquisition. You're being completely belligerent to evidence and just saying you must believe us or else. And that's all you're saying. You're not saying you have to prove your God. You don't have to do anything. You can just tell us we must believe. And that's just bullshit. You don't have to make any arguments. You don't have to provide any evidence. And that's bullshit science. Alright, enough of a video. So this has been another DraftPhysics.com and DebatePhysics.com also, but there's nobody, well, after all these years, nobody capable of making counter videos explaining how I'm wrong in any substantial or meaningful way. Nothing. Yeah, zero. All right, till the next time and such.